It's afternoon time in Ukraine, where Joseph Lindsley is. Joe, hello. I was watching the latest interview with President Zelensky, and it seems like he is attributing the slow counteroffensive to the fact that it took too long for him to get added support from the West, ammunition and weapons and so forth. So I guess that's the case. Is that how you see it?
Yeah, Bob, good afternoon from Lviv. And, you know, it's very sad if you think about it. In fact, there was a senior U.S. defense official was saying that he thinks Ukrainians have about 30 to 45 days left to achieve something major in the counteroffensive before the winter, before the weather turns into the winter. And, you know, while the ground is still firm. And that's really, I mean, it's astounding because this is the same United States government that promised many months ago Abrams tanks to the Ukrainians, and those tanks are not here yet. They're supposed to arrive in the next couple of weeks. And so the tanks arrive, and then Ukrainians, what, they have another 2 weeks to prove themselves? And there's a fundamental problem here. There's either a problem in logic or maybe in motive. And we look at what happened at the G20 summit in Delhi, and all of the parties agreed, all the nations, including the U.S. and Russia, on language about Ukraine, and they refused to condemn Russia. This is absolutely astounding. It sounds like Neville Chamberlain making a pact with Hitler in the late 1930s. And so everyone is very frustrated with the situation.
Mm-hmm. And when you say everyone is very frustrated, are you saying that, and in your reports, we often hear of the resolve of the Ukrainians and the great spirit. Do you see some dents in that lately?
No, not at all. I mean, the Ukrainians are resolved. They just wish that the world would understand exactly what's at stake. And, you know, it's the world understands. It's the politicians who maybe are afraid or who are bribed or whatever it might be. You know, there's tough news here every single day of the regular people suffering and willing to sacrifice their lives. And in the past 24 hours, we had news of a young Spanish woman. Her name was Emma Igual, and she's an example of the opposite of the G20. She's a regular, you know, individual person. She came to Ukraine in the early days of the full-scale invasion, and I never met her, but our paths almost crossed many times. We knew common people. I was in the same volunteer chat for a while, where you could see every single day she was trapped in a different city in Ukraine for almost 18 months now, rescuing people, delivering supplies. She created an organization called Road to Relief, and she was one of the most effective and brilliant volunteers. And you can probably tell where I'm going with this. She was killed by the Russians. She was on one of her missions in Donbass, and a rocket directly hit their van as though she was targeted. And I've heard details about what happened. It is disgusting. It is so absolutely awful. Two people in the vehicle survived, but her friend and fellow volunteer, Anthony Idnot, a Canadian citizen, was also killed. And when you think of the sacrifice of Emma, you know, someone who's so selfless. She could be on a beach somewhere. She could be living a life, and she could, you know, where you could forget that this trauma is happening, and for her, she and so many others make sacrifices like this every single day. She saved so many people. She brought goodwill to so many people, and then we have the people with all the resources in the world and the resources of Washington, and they can't even be honest about what they, you know, what kind of support they actually give to Ukraine. Then they expect the world of Ukraine, and without giving the tools that Ukraine needs, and then to have this absolutely, I mean, it's astounding to agree with Russia on a statement about Ukraine. And the Russian foreign minister praised the G20 statement, calling it a milestone. So I think we can see on which side people really stand.
Meanwhile, General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was asked if he had ever seen combat like what's going on in Ukraine, because he has certainly seen his share. And Milley said he's been through a lot of firefights. He's been blown up several times in vehicles due to mines and IEDs and RPGs, but never to this degree of intensity. And I know that doesn't surprise you being there.
Right? Yeah, but everyone I know who served in Afghanistan and other places, talking with my friend who was fighting, he was on a break, and he said, you know, they really need aviation. Without aviation, I mean, they can hold the line, but without the aviation support, it's going to be almost impossible to push back. And my friend also interestingly said, you know, he said, I'm a warrior. I'm not military. He said, from the moment when this is done, I'm going back to the life I wanted to lead. You know, the life I wanted to lead. But everyone has to be transformed in this moment. And I think that's sort of the courage that's required of the West. You know, I mean, yeah, we might want to forget about this. It's complicated, perhaps, and it takes some courage. That's why it's very important to study history, to look at what happened in the late 1930s. But you see here all these people that are willing to go to the fight, and no matter how difficult it is. And as my friend, the soldier, said, I said, what words would you like me to share with Chicago on Monday? And he said, you know, to the American officials and Western officials and India and China, you're talking about freedom and democracy, but Ukraine is the thing. This is the place of freedom and democracy. So you can actually, you can choose to help democracy against tyranny, or you can shut up. I think this is very stark, stark words from a guy who's in the trenches since the beginning of this. And, you know, as you think about it, I was thinking of this heavy news today. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I think, oh, it'd be nice just to run away for a while, go to a beach, you know, just, you know, like I used to when I would travel the world before the pandemic. And you know, I think that everyone has those moments. And I look at all of the foreign volunteers here in particular. And there's a great group I've mentioned before. They encountered some difficulties. They work here in Lviv. And even despite encountering difficulties, they remain cheerful and focused on their mission. And that so much inspires me that, you know, here is sort of the strongest people in the world. And, you know, when I told you that story on Friday about my friend who had crossed the border for 2 weeks for business, and he talked about how free he felt. And he said, you know, he realized he and his wife could have escaped. They could have just disappeared. Once you cross the border, you're free. You know, no one's going to make you go back. And he said he kept telling himself, you only get one life. You only get one life. And then the question was, does that mean do you run away? Do you go live on a beach somewhere and just forget about this horrible chapter? Or do you go back and you do everything you can? And he decided to come back. People like Imla decided to give their lives. This is the decision where we're at. And I thought, you know, for me, I mean, I had all that great time traveling the world before the pandemic, and all those experiences contribute to what I can do here. And I think that's the same story for every single person here. But this is the question that has to be asked of free people around the world. You know, which side are we really on? I saw an interview, local interview here, where a foreigner said, Ukraine is giving the West its soul back. And I think we have to phrase it a little bit differently. Ukraine could give the West its soul back if the West chooses to meet the challenge that we face today.
Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Hang in there, Joseph. You and the people there are tough. I know you will. We'll talk tomorrow.
Until tomorrow. Thank you.